And again, I'm not going to go back into the history much of Islam. I'll brush on it, but I'm really going to talk about kind of modern practices of Islam, like we've been doing with the other religions. We'll look a little bit at the past, but really kind of look at kind of modern practices more. And as with other religions, I'm going to brush the surface of this. So if you want to know more, there are lots of books that can tell you more. Karen Armstrong's book on Islam is a really good introduction if you want to read more. And then you can go on from there. But hers is an accessible, relatively short introduction that will tell you more. So the word Islam means either peace or submission, depending on who's doing the translating. And that's not as radical an idea as you would think. In a lot of the Semitic languages, Hebrew and Aramaic and Arabic, and you know, in a lot of the Semitic languages, the concepts of peace and submission to God are really closely linked, and so the words are really closely linked. And the same thing's true about the word Islam. Like I said, peace or submission, depending on which way you're going with your translation. You will have heard the word Allah. All that Allah is the word in Arabic for God. So if you go to the Anglican Church of Jerusalem on a Sunday morning, they worship in Arabic. The creed will be the Arabic words for "I believe in God." They'll start with "We believe in God." And so it will be, they will say they believe in Allah. I don't remember the Arabic for "believe," so I'd give you the whole sentence. But they use the word Allah in addressing God in the same way that Muslims use the word Allah in addressing God. It's just the Arabic word for God. I'm going to say this, I can't say this often enough. The God that Muslims believe in is God the Father of the Old Testament. It is that God. That is the God that they believe spoke to Muhammad, that Muhammad was a prophet of God in the same way that Isaiah was a prophet of God, and in their reckoning, Jesus was a prophet of God, Elijah was a prophet of God, and that Muhammad was the final prophet of God.
What's the difference between Islam and you just got through saying it, I forgot.
Judaism?
Muslim. Muslim and
Muslim and Islam? Yeah. A Muslim is a person who follows Islam.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Islam is the religion, so Muslim is the person.
So they're both the same, really?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. In the same way that an Episcopalian is a person who belongs to the Episcopal Church, a Muslim is a person who follows Islam.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
So the God, the Allah of Islam, is God the Father of the Old Testament. And in Muslim reckoning, Jesus is a prophet of God. Muhammad is the final prophet of God. So they would say that the teachings of Jesus are like the prophecies of Isaiah or the prophecies of any of the Old Testament prophets. They show us pieces of God, but that the final revelation came from Muhammad. Which brings me to Muhammad. Islam as a religion is based on the writings of Muhammad ibn Abdullah, who lived from 570 to 633 in what is now Saudi Arabia. The writings collectively are known as the Quran. Okay? Now, like Jesus, Muhammad himself didn't actually write anything down. Other people wrote down his teachings. Okay? So, That's so we have only the recordings of his teachings, not his own.
By his disciples,
by his followers. Muhammad lived around the area of Mecca, and in Mecca is a cube-shaped temple called the Kaaba that was ancient when Muhammad lived. And at the time of Muhammad, it was a place that kind of everybody brought their gods. There was all kinds of different gods had niches within this cube. And in order to trade in Mecca, which was a major trading center, you had to make an offering in the Kaaba, in this temple in Mecca. The speculation is that that's where Muhammad learned about Judaism, from Jewish traders who came to Mecca to make an offering so that they could trade in the marketplace. That's not known for sure, but that's the speculation. When Islam took over Mecca, they expelled all the other gods from the Kaaba, and it is now the center of the Islamic faith, which is why Muslim people, when they pray towards Mecca. So if you're ever around a Muslim when they're praying, they will figure out where Mecca is and pray in that direction.
So do they have actual physical representations of the other gods?
When Muhammad was there, yes.
Okay.
Although not for the Jews. The Jews never made idols of their gods.
Right.
It's a commandment. So they had just a place where they worshipped within the Kaaba. But Christians came to the Kaaba too, because you had to make an offering within the temple. And it actually, Arab culture at that time was really very progressive. So they said, well, you got to make to trade in our marketplace, you got to make an offering at our temple, but we'll give you a place to do it to your god. You don't have to do it to a particular god. Just, you know, find a place for your god. which was very different than by 570. You know, if you wanted to trade in a Roman marketplace, the marketplace was under the protection of Christianity was the legal religion of the empire. You had to be a Christian to do trading in the marketplace. The Arab culture said, sure, you know. Find a god, you know, find a place for your god.
Why do they pray five times a day?
Well, I'll talk about that when I get there.
Okay.
So the writings of, or the teachings of Muhammad are written down in the book that is known as the Quran. Now, Muslims would say that what we call the Old Testament and the New Testament are also holy books. And so that they think that those books contain some truths about God, and that the Quran is the final truth about God.
Is the Quran very similar to the Old Testament?
Not at all.
Oh, not at all?
Not at all.
Oh, okay.
And it's, you know, the earliest books in the Old Testament began to be compiled about 5,000 years B.C., and the Quran was compiled 500 A.D., so... You know, you're talking about almost 6,000 years of difference. So it's not surprising that they are very similar.
I remember when we had that Arabic speaker, he said there is a book in the Quran about the Virgin Mary.
There is. There is a book in the... There are teachings in the Quran about the Virgin Mary, who they honor. They call her Blessed Mary. They don't believe Jesus was born. They don't believe in the virgin birth, but they honor Mary as an obedient servant of God. And they particularly honor the Magnificat, the saying in Luke that Mary said when the angel told her that she was going to have a baby. They honor that particularly. So, in the practice of Islam, there are five pillars. All right? These are the five things that you practice, if you're a practicing Muslim, that you must do. The first is to have faith and to state your faith out loud, and there's a specific way that you state your faith. In English, it goes, there is only one God, and Muhammad is his prophet. All right? That is the statement of faith. Like we have the Nicene Creed that is the statement of our faith, their statement of faith is, there is only one God, and Muhammad is his prophet. All right? So that's their equivalent of the Nicene Creed. The second, and that, I'm sorry, in Arabic, the statement of faith is called the Iman, I-M-A-N. Iman. There is only one God, and Muhammad is his prophet. The second pillar of Islam is prayer, which is in Arabic, Salah. S-E-L-A-H. Salah. In Muslim practice, prayer happens 5 times a day. This is not particularly unusual. A lot of religions have the practice of what's called fixed hour prayer, that you pray at specific times. This is a part of Christian worship, particularly in the Middle Ages it diverted to the monasteries, but really the idea that you pray at set times of day is really pretty regular. In Benedictine monasticism, you pray 9 times a day. When Thomas Cranmer was writing the Book of Common Prayer, he created 2 prayer offices for morning and evening, so that you were to pray twice a day, morning prayer and evening prayer. Those were daily prayers. A lot of Christians pray morning prayer, noonday prayer, evening prayer. And the Jewish people pray morning prayers and evening prayers, sometimes noonday prayers. Like all of those, the fixed hour prayers of Islam are at certain times of the day. So sunrise, noon, sunset, bedtime, fixed times in your day. And the idea of Muslim prayer is the same as Christian fixed hour prayer, as Jewish fixed hour prayer. You stop and remember God. And there are some fixed ways that you do that.
And we have 7 types of prayer.
We have lots of different types of prayer.
But they address the same types of things?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Really, the function of prayer in Islam, remember we're back to peace or submission, is to remind yourself that you owe obedience to God and to bring yourself into the presence of God. So that's prayer. The third pillar of Islam is charity, which is called zakah. And there are 2 ways that you can fulfill the obligation of charity. If you have resources, you are to give charity, and you are to do it privately. It doesn't count if people know about it. All right. And this is, you know, we have this in our scripture, right? When you give alms, don't let your right hand know what the left hand is doing.
Yeah.
They take that very literally. If people know about it, it doesn't count. You have to give charity anonymously. if you don't have resources, you can fulfill the obligation of charity by allowing others to be charitable to you. So if you are poor, you're not required to give charity, you fulfill your obligation to be charitable by allowing others to give you charity.
So, do they usually give money?
It's usually money.
That's what I thought.
It's usually money.
Money?
Yes. And because it's so important that it be anonymous, it's much easier to do that giving money. Because then you can give it to an organization, the organization can provide the charity so that no one knows that you you help them. Islamic teaching thinks a great deal about people who are poor. A lot of the teaching is about protecting the dignity of the poor. So this is another piece of that, is that Muhammad didn't want the what in English society became Lady Bountiful. You know, the lady of the manor showing up to the poor people with her basket and setting up that relationship of dependence and gratitude. He really wanted a separation. And also that you're not required to do what you can't do. So that's the third pillar. The fourth pillar is fasting, and the pronunciation of this varies widely, but swam, I think, is the close I can get it. The English transliteration is S-A-W-M, but yeah. I've heard lots of different people say it in kind of lots of different ways. Fasting takes place during the month of Ramadan. Ramadan is determined by the lunar calendar, so it moves quite a lot through the year. But during Ramadan, the faithful Muslim is to fast from sunup to sundown, and that includes water. So nothing. You are allowed to have nothing from sunup to sundown, unless you have a physical issue, unless you are physically unable to
do it. How often do you do this in the month of Ramadan?
Every day. Every day for a month. You are allowed to eat nothing from sunup to sundown.
But you can eat at night.
You can eat at night.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you can eat at night.
Woo.
Yeah. You can eat it, like I said, including water, mm-hmm. Unless there's a physical reason that you can't. Mm-hmm. And some people get exemptions from this. People who have to work outside doing heavy labor are allowed to have water. You know, there's a little bit of flexibility there.
How about alcohol?
Never. And I'll talk about that in a minute. Not just during Ramadan, never.
When I was
boy, I'm glad I'm not.
Yeah. When I was teaching a class of Islamic people, mm-hmm. it was a 3-hour class, so we had a break. Mm-hmm. So there were a lot of women, maybe five mm-hmm. women in the class. So I went in the bathroom, and they went in the bathroom, mm-hmm. and they would force themselves to vomit so that they didn't swallow their saliva mm-hmm. during the break.
Yeah, some people take it to an extreme.
Yeah, very serious.
Pregnancy is another reason you would get an exemption from fasting during Ramadan, though. If you're pregnant, you're allowed to drink and eat. And obviously, Islam started in a land kind of near the equator. And so sunup to sundown doesn't vary very much through the year. As Islam spread, and again, it's a lunar calendar, so Ramadan moves through the year. There are times when Muslims in Norway, Ramadan happens in the summer. Hmm. And sunup to sundown in Norway, or sunup to sundown in Buffalo right now, is a long period of time, right? And sometimes it's a shorter period of time depending on where you are. But sunup to sundown, like I said, during Ramadan. And then the last pillar of Islam is the pilgrimage, or the Hajj, excuse me, in which every Muslim who is able to is to go to Mecca once in their life. So lots of Muslim people save their whole lives to be able to go on pilgrimage to Mecca, and Mecca during Ramadan. And so if you watch the news, sometimes you'll see.
Yeah, they're walking around.
There are specific things you do when you go on pilgrimage to Mecca. So if you watch the news, sometimes you'll see that. All right. So those are the practices, the pillars of Islam. Now, you notice what's missing from there, right? You don't ever actually have to go to a congregation. Islam is a faith that can be practiced completely by an individual without a community. Now, they have communities. The holy day is Friday, and there are congregational prayer services called Juma that are conducted on Fridays, usually Friday at noon. And so if you go to mosques, you will find that the congregational prayer and teaching happens Friday at noon.
Do they have priests?
No, teachers, like Judaism. the imam, who's a teacher. Like most Judaism these days, the idea that somebody would stand between you and God is not a part of the faith. That you can talk to God yourself. You don't need somebody to do it on your behalf.
So, in all countries, are the imams always men?
Depends. And thank you for moving me on. Islam has a spectrum of practice. Just like Christianity, just like Judaism, just like Buddhism, just like all of the religions we talk about. There's a spectrum of practice, and the practice is deeply influenced by the culture in which it is. Now, in most countries, in most places, in most practices of Islam, the imam is a man. However, at both ends of the spectrum, there are teachers who are women. On the very kind of progressive end of the spectrum, there are women imams who teach the whole congregation.
Where is that?
Some in the United States.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And other Western, more Westernized.
More Western countries.
Yeah. On the very conservative, and that's the very, very liberal end of the spectrum. Okay, the very conservative end of the spectrum, there are women teachers who teach only women because they feel like women should teach women and men shouldn't teach women.
Well, they don't have, in Saudi Arabia, the women don't have men teachers.
Right.
Except by video.
That's right. So there are women who teach the women because the men aren't allowed to be in their presence. Mm-hmm. So you go to either end of the spectrum, and you find some women teachers, but the vast majority of Muslims, the teachers are men. There are practices that most Muslims don't participate in, but again, spectrum, right? One of the practices is modesty, both for men and women. To be a good Muslim, you are to practice modesty. And so for women, this gets more prescribed than for men, but both genders are supposed to dress modestly. For women, covering of the hair is, and again, along the spectrum, there are Muslim women who don't cover their hair, including the Queen of Jordan. There are Muslim women who wear full, it's called hijab, which covers your, the garment's called a burqa, that covers your face and your hair and your whole body. So there's a huge spectrum. But you'll see women in headscarves. The idea that a woman covering her hair in public is a sign of modesty is not really that strange of a concept. It's really not that long since you couldn't go to a Christian church as a woman without a hat, right? In England, you still see women wear hats at weddings because it used to be, and I remember this, I was taught this as a young woman, so it's not, you know, this isn't way back in the way back, that a well-dressed woman always wears a hat when she leaves her house.
Gloves and nylons and
yes.
The whole shebang.
Like the queen, she has.
Like the queen always wears a hat because that's the, you know, when she was growing up, it was unthinkable that a woman would walk out of her house without a hat. You only took your hat off in your own house. Mm-hmm. So the idea of a woman covering her hair to be modest is not solely an Islamic practice. We see it mostly in Islam these days because Christians have largely abandoned it. You still see it in some Christian denominations and certainly in some Orthodox Jewish denominations.
My mother told me, I don't know if this is true, that Amish women, mm-hmm. you know how they wear that mm-hmm. little cap? They wear that during labor in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
That's
yes.
what my mother told me.
Yep, absolutely. It's conservative Amish women, conservative Christian women, mm-hmm. you show your hair only to your husband.
Mm-hmm. They wore more bonnets, right?
Yes.
Looks like more,
yeah. But again, you know, I mean, if you've read the Little House on the Prairie novels, Carolyn Ingalls was horrified that Laura was out haying without her sunbonnet because what would people think of her, right? This is the same idea, that it's a part of a modesty to cover your hair as a woman. A lot of men cover their hair in public. If you look around, if you look at pictures particularly of the Islamic world, a lot of them are wearing headscarves with bands around them. Mm-hmm. That's a modesty idea, that you, in the same reason that a Jewish man would wear a yarmulke, men cover their hair to show obedience to God.
There was something, I think it must have been in the temple in Jerusalem, mm-hmm. where prostitutes would go, and wasn't there something about if a girl had something on her head, she was not a prostitute?
Yeah, temple prostitutes weren't the Jewish temple in Jerusalem, it was the Roman temples in the Roman world. If you were a temple prostitute, was the women, female temple prostitutes didn't cover their hair. And so when in Paul, some of Paul's writings, he tells Christian women to cover their hair because they were living in the freedom of Christ and not covering their hair, and people were mistaking them for prostitutes. Mm. So Paul, and that was getting in the way of spreading the gospel. So Paul said, cover your head. Stop. You know?
What was the purpose of having prostitutes? In the
Roman temples?
Yeah.
They were both, depending on the god or the goddess, there were some temples had male prostitutes, some temples had female prostitutes. It was a way to make an offering to the gods, to come closer to God.
Who was doing the offering? The prostitute?
No, the generally the man who came to have sex at the temple.
Oh, wow.
They had sex in the temple?
Oh, yeah. That's why you would have prostitutes in the temple.
Wow.
God.
Yeah. So, the ancient Near East was not Victorian. The idea that sex was this restricted thing was not the ancient world's idea. That wasn't the world they lived in. So modesty is one of the things that are considered to be a part of Muslim practice. Abstaining from pork is one of the things that Muslims are expected to do. And just like there's a series of ways to, a series of foods that are kosher and not kosher, and kosher has a lot to do with the way the animal is killed and the way the blood is treated. The same thing is true with meats in Islam. They take a lot of the Jewish kosher ideas and use them, although it's called halal in Islam, because that's an Arabic word. And it has to do with the way the animal is killed and the way the blood is disposed of, but there are also some animals that can never be halal, and the pig is one of them. So, like Jews, Muslims mm-hmm. don't eat pork. Mm-hmm. And again, spectrum of practice.
Is that even true today?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I think there are halal stores, and
yes.
I think Jews can buy food
yes.
there, too.
Yes. If Jewish people can't find a kosher butcher or kosher source of food, the halal method of killing is for all but the most Orthodox Jews. The halal method of killing meets the same requirements as many Jews believe the kosher requirements are. You want to be careful because you can't say anything.
100%.
There's spectrums, but So pork is absolutely not halal. Shellfish is actually absolutely not halal. But there are...
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah, but then killing... The way the animal is killed and the blood is disposed of makes other animals halal or not. So there are sometimes... you'll read kerfuffles in the news about, well, the school district was serving halal meat and didn't tell us. And people act like it's this, you know, well, we're, you know, Christian kids don't believe in halal. Well, no, we don't believe our meat needs to be killed that way, but there's nothing wrong with
right.
it being killed
right.
that way. It's just, you know, we don't think it's a big deal because Jesus told us it wasn't. Mm-hmm. So we don't worry about those things. But part of the freedom we have in Christ. But there's nothing wrong with it. It's just the way that it is. So pork. Alcohol is something that most observant Muslims would say that they are not to partake of, and it's because it's a waste. That the reason for abstaining from alcohol is that, well, twofold. First of all, it's a waste. It's expensive, and that's money you could be giving to charity. So you shouldn't be spending your money on alcohol. But also because it lowers your inhibitions, so it makes you less modest and less obedient to God. So again, you know, spectrums of practice, but the vast majority of Muslims would say that consuming alcohol is something that you should not do. And the same thing with gambling. Observant Muslims would say that you should not gamble, again, because if you have money to gamble, you should be giving it to charity. That if you're following the way of God, there is no such thing as having extra money. If your needs are met, you should be giving to those whose needs aren't met. And that's the core of the teaching about charity, is that once you have enough, you are to give to others. So, and again, you know, spectrum of practice, you see people taking that to one extreme or to the other. But the core value is when you have sufficient.
Now, how about things like dancing and makeup and stuff like that? Is that
that's not really
modesty? Well, modesty.
Makeup could be contrary to modesty, depending on how it's used. Mm-hmm. Dancing isn't really considered. I mean, it's possible to dance immodestly,
sure. Yeah. Okay.
But dancing in and of itself is not considered immodest. Now, again, spectrums. You go really conservative. So the Taliban in Afghanistan, and they would say that making noise in public is immodest. Mm-hmm. So singing in public, dancing in public, having your shoes squeak in public is immodest because you're drawing attention to yourself. That's the far extreme. As you come more to the mainstream, you find people say, it's possible to do all those things immodestly. It's possible to do all those things modestly. There are two major holidays according to the lunar calendar. The first is Eid, E-I-D, Fitr, F-I-T-R, which is the end of Ramadan. Now, there's also a great big feast the first night of Ramadan, but the major celebration comes at the end of Ramadan. But every night during Ramadan, you can have a celebration, and lots of Muslim people will invite people over to dinner every night during Ramadan. Or if they're not having people at their own home, they're going to someone else's to celebrate. And then the second one is Eid, E-I-D, Adha, A-D-H-A, which is the end of the pilgrimage. Eid means end, you might have figured out. So those are kind of the major, the two major holidays. According to Islam, like every faith, they have lots of minor holidays that I don't really know all that much about. The birth of the Prophet Muhammad is one. There are a bunch of others. The three holiest sites in Islam, Mecca's the first one, because that's where the Kabbalah is. Medina is the second one, because that's where Muhammad first established his community before they were able to take Mecca. So Medina. And then the third is in Jerusalem. And there is a mosque called the Dome of the Rock, which you may have heard of because it caught fire at the same time Notre Dame was on fire. This week.
Oh my God.
It was not damaged as much as Notre Dame was, but it was on fire at exactly the same time that Notre Dame was on fire.
That's suspicious.
We think so. They think so. They think it was the Dome of the Rock mosque fire was arson.
Mm-hmm.
The Dome of the Rock is a mosque actually on Temple Hill in Jerusalem, the same place that the Jewish temple was. There's a mosque now called the Dome of the Rock, and it's the third holiest site in Islam because Muslims believe that Muhammad was taken into heaven by God in the same way that the prophet Elijah was, and that during his journey he stopped at the site of the temple in Jerusalem, which of course wasn't there in 570. So he stopped God stopped him at the site of the temple in Jerusalem before assuming him into heaven. And when Muslims took the Holy Land in the Middle Ages, they built a mosque on the site of where Muhammad stopped in his journey, which is the Dome of the Rock. This is the reason that there's a lot of conflict in Jerusalem, because there's the western wall of the temple, the last remaining temple, and the Dome of the Rock mosque. So you have the holiest site in Judaism, the third holiest site in Islam, in the same place. And also that the western wall of the temple is, of course, holy also to Christians, because it's a place where Jesus worshipped. So you have the three major Abrahamic religions coming together, all honoring exactly the same square footage. And
did you say this was on a mountain? A mount?
It's a hill, basically, in Jerusalem.
And what's it called?
The mosque is called the Dome of the Rock.
Is there a rock there?
It's called the Temple Hill.
Oh, Temple Hill. Okay.
Yeah. There is a rock. Yes, there is the rock that supposedly Muhammad landed on, which is why it's called the Dome of the Rock. The dome is over the rock. Just like if you go to Nazareth, there's a great big fancy church of, this is the place where Jesus was born. This is the place where Muhammad stopped. Mm-hmm. Is it really? Well, who knows? It's more likely only because it's 600 years later, so we have, it's a little bit close. The tradition's a little less in the past, but, who knows? So, just briefly, there are two branches of Islam, Sunni and Shia.
You want to spell those?
Sunni is S-U-N-N-I. Shia is S-H-I-A. And I'm not going to talk a lot about them, mostly because I don't know a great deal about the intricacies of the difference between them. But the division goes back to shortly after the death of Muhammad, and the original division had to do with who would lead the community. But there's, like Protestants and Catholics in Christianity, they approach the faith in different ways.
Is there any conflict between these two groups?
Oh, yes.
I thought so, because you hear it on the news.
The conflict between Iran and Iraq
is
a conflict between Sunni and Shia.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sunni is the bigger group. Mm-hmm. Shia is the smaller group. Fewer Muslims are Shia than are Sunni. And Sunni Islam is more evangelistic at this point in history than Shia Islam. And now you've just about exhausted my knowledge.
How about the spread of Islam?
Islam spread from the Middle East, from the Middle East through North Africa, and then into Spain, but then also keep going. So Indonesia is a large segment of Islam today. Pakistan, so the Indian subcontinent, spread across that way.
Is it not worldwide the largest, has the largest population among religions?
It depends on how you count.
Okay.
But yes.
What would be the close second?
Christianity.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Whether Christianity or Islam are the largest depends on how you count.
Mm-hmm. Is Islam growing faster?
Yes, because Islam is largely in regions where the population is still growing. Mm-hmm. And Christianity is more deeply established in regions where the population is not. Mm-hmm. Like Christianity in its early days, Islam appeals a great deal to people who are poor and disenfranchised, because the teachings are all about respecting the dignity of those who have less. So it appeals a great deal to people in those categories. Again, like Christianity in its early days, grew among the poor or among women, because it appealed to people who felt like they had no power. Islam does the same.
Now, a lot of black Americans convert to Muslim. Mm-hmm. Is slavery the main reason for that?
Not so much slavery as racism. Islam, again, appeals to people who feel poor and disenfranchised. African Americans in the United States, because of racism, tend to be poor and disenfranchised, so Islam is appealing.
And there's no prejudice in Islam against other...
There is prejudice in Islam, but the teachings are are such. I mean,
but do they welcome black people?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Others of color?
Yes. Okay. Although I will say that Muslims are human beings, mm-hmm. and so there are just as much... It's just as easy to be racist, mm-hmm. although it's harder to be racist when you're a person of color, and Muslims are more likely to be people of color than, but not exclusively.
Do you think the word militant applies more to the Muslims than to the Christians?
No.
You don't think so?
I don't. I think there are militant Islams, there are militant Christians. We call them the Ku Klux Klan or white nationalists, but they take their teachings from Christianity, and they're just as militant and just as likely to be violent. There are militant Jews. If you read Israeli papers, there are lots of issues of militant conservative Jews. There are militant Buddhists, believe it or not. I think the greatest division is between those who are radical of all faiths and those who are moderate of all faiths. I find that I have a lot more in common with moderate Jews and Muslims than I do with radical members of my own faith. I have much more in common with moderate Muslims than I do with radical Christians.
Why is beheading such a big thing to the Muslims? It seems...
It's not such a big thing to the Muslims. It's such a big thing in the Arab world.
Oh.
That's an Arab cultural practice.
God almighty.
And probably a lot of the militancy is probably also the same thing. You know, if you're like in Afghanistan or countries like that are very... tribes.
Yeah.
You know, that are fighting against each other for... territory and things like that. I think it's, again, a cultural...
The Christian government of Nigeria beheads just as many people as Saudi Arabia does, actually more. So it's a cultural practice. And it comes out whether you're a Christian or a Muslim, but you live in a culture where beheading is the way to do it.
I saw a video maybe 2 or 3 years ago, mm-hmm. of maybe there were 10 Christians, mm-hmm. kneeling, mm-hmm. all men, mm-hmm. and the Muslims or Arabs, whoever it was, standing, mm-hmm. behind them and, mm-hmm. shot all of them right, mm-hmm. there. I mean, how brutal is that?
Well, yes.
What about the Holocaust?
Yeah, I mean, it's yeah. You know, brutality is not the province of any particular religion. Muslims, radical Muslims, will execute people they believe to be heretics. Radical Christians will execute people they believe to be heretics. Radical Christians, well, actually, mainstream Christians, executed people they believed to be heretics even though they were other Christians for 500 years in Europe. So
the Inquisition.
The Inquisition, the Protestant Reformation executed Catholics. The Catholic Counter-Reformation executed Protestants. Okay. Executing people because we believe them to be heretics is not the province of any particular religion. We happen to hear more about it coming out of Muslim countries right now, because the countries where that is still practiced tend to be predominantly Muslim, and we now have mass media. But I think if you did a tally, I'm not entirely sure which religion in Africa has executed more people for heresy, Islam or Christianity, if you look at the whole of Africa.
There's a lot of scapegoating going on.
Well, that's
true. You have to have somebody to blame for a lot of things, and especially the current administration. You can see how Trump was acting toward the Muslim representative.
And so they
publicize that because it's to their benefit.
Well, and also the way that we talk about it. You know, when we talk about Muslim terrorists as terrorists, the Christian fundamentalist who walked into the Tree of Life synagogue and shot people was not called a Christian terrorist. They called him mentally ill or, you know. The white nationalists who marched in Charlottesville, we call white nationalists rather than Christian terrorists. That's because we choose to call them that way.
Yep.
But they're Christian terrorists. We just don't title them that way because we don't want to think about it. You know, and of course, all Christians are easy to say, well, they're not really Christians. Well, okay, but, you know.
Well, the Islamic and would
yeah,
say,
yeah.
That's not really
Islam. That's not
Islam.
Really Islam, and they do.
They look
yes.
at
yes.
terrorism, they
yeah.
say that's not really
that's
Islam.
Not really Islam. That's not what Islam teaches. That's not what we believe. That's what I mean when I say I have much more in common with with moderate imams. I actually have a lot more in common with the moderate imams here in Buffalo than I do with some of the Catholic priests. The moderate imams are much more willing to have conversation with me than some of, not all Catholic priests, but some of the more conservative Catholic priests. So you don't have to go all the way to the end.
And you know.
The Catholic priests are busy doing other things.
Well, yes, but you know. So, you know, there's, it's really easy to scapegoat people who we don't really understand, which is part of the reason we're doing this. But if you look at the practices of their faith, the practices and teachings of their faith have a lot in common with the practices and teaching of our faith. We're commanded to do charity. We're commanded to pray. We're commanded to confess our faith in God. We're not commanded to go on pilgrimage, but pilgrimage is not foreign to Christian practice. Why do you think so many people are devastated by Notre Dame? Because it was a place of pilgrimage. It was a place that people went to encounter God.
Matthew Lincoln doesn't think that the born-agains are Christians.
The what?
The born-again.
Born-again
evangelicals.
Yeah.
It's...
Do you think that?
I think they're Christians because I think that they believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, and that's, as far as I know, the requirement to be Christian. Do I believe they're mistaken? Oh, yes.
In what way?
I think that they completely misinterpret the teachings of Jesus. I think they put the focus on completely the wrong things. Mm-hmm. I think that they pull the teachings out of context.
But what are these that would label them as not being Christian-like?
Anyone who would call themselves in the modern times an evangelical Christian, a lot of mainstream Christians look at them with some suspicion because they've taken over the public. When you say Christian, the word that anybody thinks of now, the connotation of the word is these far right wing evangelicals. Like I said, I would not say they're not Christian, first of all, because one of the teachings of Jesus that I hold really firmly is, it is not mine to judge someone else's relationship with God. It's God's to judge someone else's relationship with God. I will say that I believe that what they are teaching bears no resemblance to the Jesus I find in Scripture or the God that I know. But...
Can I just ask one more question about Islam?
Yeah.
You know how we have the commandment, honor thy father and mother?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything about women in Islam? I mean, so many of the Muslims I knew hold their mother at a very high pedestal. That's the most important thing.
Well...
Is that in the religion or is that culture?
It is in the religion. Muslims would say that the Ten Commandments are commandments of God. So that they would hold the Ten Commandments as highly as any Jew or any Christian. So the honor your father and your mother. Now, honoring your mother is particularly cultural in a culture that practices polygamy. Particularly honoring your mother is particularly important, and you've just about exhausted my knowledge of why. But that it is a particularly Arab and African cultural practice.
And I think you said about Judaism, I listened to the lecture yesterday, that they bury
They're dead very quickly.
So do Muslims.
And for similar reasons. But also, again, that's also cultural. Remember, if you live in a desert climate, getting bodies buried quickly is a practical as well as a religious thing. All right?
What's up next week?
Okay, next week there is no class. We're taking next week off because I'm taking some vacation days after Holy Week. So no class next week. When we come back... In the last week in April, we will talk about Jehovah's Witnesses. Okay? Mm-hmm. All right.